This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashrin Johan. Over the past couple of days, we've covered various angles on Live and Learn here with regards to protesting in light of the Lawan protest that took place last Saturday at Dataran Merdeka. Okay, well, Masjid Jami LRT area to be specific. And on Monday, we took a look at why authorities should stop using intimidation tactics against protesters. Yesterday, we did a show on the significance of Dataran Merdeka, as well as the influence of the built environment on protests and public participation. Today, I'm going to be taking a look at the role of the media and journalists during a protest. What are the do's and don'ts, as well as how the media should be framing protest stories. Joining me on the show to share his insights is independent journalist Norman Goh. Welcome to the show, Norman. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm so far so good. I think we are still seeing, right after the Lawan protest, we are still seeing a week of crazy political upheaval in Malaysia. It's like we are having our own House of Cards drama. I think we'll be waiting to see some more sequels after the Daulat movie.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like, you know, like you said, House of Cards, some people say Game of Thrones, but it seems like the biggest losers in all of this are the people, regardless of what, you know, has been going on the elite level. But Norman, just switching gears, let's talk about the Lawan protest. You were on the ground as an observer, as a journalist, you were doing your job. What were your overall thoughts on the Lawan protest that took place on Saturday?
I think generally people have been, you know, cooped up at home. I mean, likewise, you and I, we've been working from home since beginning of the year. I mean, even some of us have been working from home since last year. So I think overall, the Lawan protest was seen as an outlet for a lot of Malaysians to finally air their pent-up dissatisfaction and frustration. I wouldn't use another anecdote, but it would, you know, colloquially, I would use that. But I think it is more like a way to provide people to air and to express how they feel about the current management of COVID-19 and as well as the economy itself in the country. Well, to the listeners as well, this is also the third demonstration over the past year. We've seen the earlier one from Undi 18 March to the Parliament, and then we have the Buka Puasa Buka Parliament, and then the Black Flags convoy the week before that. And actually, I forgot one more. It's actually a Hatta Doctor contract. And this is by far the bigger ones than the previous protests, despite the, you know, COVID-19 going on in the country. I mean, from the ground itself, I see that there were a lot of people who were thinking about whether they should go out or not. People are really afraid, in fact, because due to Delta variant still within the community, and there are also sporadic infections of COVID-19. Although that we are seeing a daily rate of immunization of more than 500,000 a day, which is, I think, very, very good. But at the end of the day, right, we shouldn't be thinking that just because of COVID, that should actually be used as a reason or excuse by the authorities to suppress any dissent or disallow any space for the people to protest or demonstrate. Authorities should actually think about, you know, allowing and providing SOPs, of which the organizers of the Solidarity Rakyat actually made a good one by, you know, having marshals reminding the participants to observe physical distancing. All of them were wearing masks. Some of them wear triple, including a face shield along the way. And you know, they look like, you know, when you're in school, ready, getting ready for perimpunan, and then they're lining up in four rows. It's like, of course, they're not gonna put their hands over their shoulders. It's like, you know, like kids. Yep. But no, you can see that it's well organized. And the thing is that, interestingly, most of them are a lot of young people, and the well-known politicians or personalities were not there. So I think, in a way, that, you know, this really showcased this particular protest, mostly the voice of the young people. Of course, Tien Chua was there, and some of the like Ame was there, but, you know, Syed Saddiq wasn't on the ground. Well, of course, the following two days, it was the MPs who marched to the parliament.
Yep, certainly. Now, Norman, you know, when it comes to this kind of protest, I mean, any event, right? you will, of course, see a lot of media on the ground doing their job. But when it comes to protests specifically, right, how do you approach it? What do you think is the media's role during a protest?
I think media will have to be... Sometimes it's really difficult what angle you want to take, what kind of thing. But first of all, what we need to do is to really understand what's the purpose of this protest? Why do they want to carry out this protest? Journalists on the ground will always have to remind themselves that you have to report objectively. And then sometimes you have to be aware of certain things that may happen inevitably. You know, like sort of we have seen a lot of journalists have been covering many, many other protests in the past 10 years, including Bursa, Red Shirt Rally and things like that. Bear in mind, it's that you have to be very, very objective on the ground, speak to different groups of people. And then sometimes we tend to forget is that when we report, we have to bear in mind that we do not bring harm to anyone whom we speak to as well. Particularly if they are children, we have to avoid from putting the children in our coverage in danger as well. And some of the few things that we have to do, things like that. And of course, during this particular protest, it's rather different because we're in the midst of COVID-19. And then it is, in fact, hazardous for a lot of press members. In fact, we are putting our life on the line in the case of if we do get infected, it's also a danger because we may actually bring home to our family. But one thing to note is that this particular protest, it is being held in an open space. So, some of the few things usually like the press will always get criticized by those who are following live and say, hey, well, why the press members are not following physical distancing and stuff like that. I think protests, sometimes we have to cover it. We have to try our best to cover all sides and to speak to as many people as possible. And also, we need to identify who are the main organizers, main spokesperson. Are we speaking to the right person and stuff like that?
Okay, so let's get into some of what you mentioned, the details and some of the other stuff that went on during the protest as well. So in this specific protest, right, in the aftermath, there was a video that went viral of a group of angry youths at the protest jumping around, you know, flipping their middle fingers and all of that. And initially, when the video went on social media, many were quick to dismiss them, saying that, oh, these guys are just provocateurs and so on and so forth. They're trying to cause trouble. But later, many also came out and defended them, saying that, you know, in reality, if you were on the ground, this is what some others observed, they said that, you know, these are just a group of disenfranchised youth and they just have a different way of expressing themselves. Maybe it's a little bit more aggressive, but it's also, you know, within the realms of a peaceful protest. So in this regard, right, Norman, did you think the media played a role in causing this confusion? Did the media perhaps frame these boys in a negative light?
Yeah, on the ground, sometimes it's really difficult to actually make that decision, even for myself. Of course, some of us have been covering protests for some time. We know that how things are run, there are many different kind of groups. I think sometimes it is really difficult. How do you report about these boys? What are they doing? Well, of course, you go back again. Some of the instructions from the Lawan organizers are telling them to follow instructions by the marshals, protest peacefully and all that, showing that you are the maturity comes to protesting or demonstrating, following SOPs and all that. But, you know, there's also another part where should you report or should you not report? And how do you report on this? I think one key important thing as a journalist is that report as it is, but also providing context. Providing context in the sense here is that organizers have actually played their part in making sure that security is being secured. Security is there as well as orderly manner. That's one. Secondly, is that who are these boys? Of course, we wouldn't as quick to make judgment by calling them provocateurs and all that. But first of all, I think it's also important to understand why are they angry? Why are they flipping their fingers? Who are they? of course, there's also a skepticism at that. Why suddenly there's a, you know, all of a sudden you have a rowdy group. That happens in a lot of protests. Suddenly when you have a peaceful protest and you have a sudden provocators, because flipping middle finger is actually one of what happened towards the end when the police informed the organizers to disperse, and then everyone was actually walking back in a single file, two file and all that, walking back to Masjid Jami LRT. Then suddenly the same group, they were using skateboards and start hitting on the ground, trying to break it. And then that caused the second round of media frenzy, but not as bad as the middle finger thing. So it is a confusion. I have to agree, it is a confusion. But sometimes we have to hold back and try to understand the thing better, but also to speak to the organizers, maybe asking them who they are. Do they know who they are? But what we can see is that the marshals, talked to them, and then they were toned down after that. So you can see that it's just not just that one particular incident should not be the sole representative of the whole protest.
Yeah. And on that note, right, should journalists have empathy and understand the cause? Because, of course, as journalists, the aim is always, balance. But at the same time, news is rarely ever, 100% neutral. The aim is balance, but as media personnel, we wield the power to shape narratives. Does the media press have a responsibility to frame stories in a progressive manner? So, for example, right, let's say a group of protests, a group of people who during the protests, they're acting not violently, but aggressively, slightly a bit aggressive, their way of expressing, or maybe like we mentioned earlier, jumping, yelling, flipping middle fingers, or as we see in other countries, for example, in let's say the US, where they flip over an empty police car. In these moments, right, do you think it's important for the media to show empathy and when they put out their content, be wary of the headlines they put out to understand why these protesters are angry, rather than just frame them as, oh, okay, there's a riot at this protest and these bunch of people are, very different from the rest of us?
Yeah, that's one of the key points where important thing to note is that journalists are you give voice to the people who can't speak. That's one important thing. Sometimes people don't have any outlet to speak. And one of the ways is actually to go down to protest and to show to show their voice to those in power and things like that. When things happen like this, when it comes to flipping in police car, getting rowdy or throwing bottles and all that, it goes into that verge of rioting. Rather than protesting, because there's a line to be drawn as well, whether it's a violent rioting, and all that, or is it a peaceful protest? We still got to report on the ground, and no matter what, as it is, we have to report as it is. Yes, deep inside, we may have the empathy, but we also need to provide that important thing, as I mentioned earlier, is the context of why it happened and how it happened, what led to this. It cannot be just, as it is, these groups are rowdy, they are very violent, this, but you do not give a bigger picture of why did they do that, how did that happen, why people are being so violent, what instigated that sort of violence. It cannot happen just like that out of the sudden and reporters just report, oh, there is a fight going on between two groups. You have to go deeper than that. So, although it is very difficult to maintain objectivity on the ground, there will be certain biasness. And also where the newsroom stands, some newsrooms usually take a stand how they report. But at the end of the day, all newsrooms actually try their best to strike a balance of when there is certain parts, or when it comes to violence or even rowdy groups, you report as it is. But of course, you need to tell the people, the readers, what actually happened before, after, and also the whole picture of what's going on.
Yeah. And what are the consequences if reporters don't do this, if they don't provide the bigger picture, if they don't provide you know, the proper context and things like that. And they just say, okay, there's this group of rioters and this is what happened at the protest. What are the consequences of that?
I think sometimes it will also provide the a wrong picture of what actually happened on the ground. It may be misleading. It can be, you know, misinformed as well on the ground and how things are actually happening. And you cannot, everything is just focused into one, so you can't do that. So as journalists, I think, you know, when you don't follow this, it will actually lead to, you know, these days, news consumers are smart. And they're like, hey, why are you reporting like this? And yet this particular publication or that particular publication have been saying this. And see, they can actually make the comparison between the
right.
two. So when you don't follow these principles, that will also affect the trust and also trustworthiness of a journalism or even a news organization. So, of course, one of the few things that we noticed over the past year is that there is a downward trend of the public trust towards the media. So media will have to be, you know, sometimes you really, really have to amp up your game when it comes to balanced reporting. Get as many people, talking heads, to provide a wider, you know, cast a wider net in terms of reporting. And make sure that you get proper sources and official sources sometimes in reporting. This is to, you know, you give a better sense of, how to say, a trust to the news consumers.
Yeah. Is this a bigger challenge in the age of social media and, you know, forwarding WhatsApp messages? Because, you know, to give a lot of reporters the benefit of the doubt, right? Sometimes, you know, the headline, you can only put certain number of words, and so they do. And then, you know, in the if you actually click into the article, there is the bigger picture, there is the context, there is the explanation and everything. But in the age of current digital era and the way information is passed along these days, do you think is that an added challenge? Because although you provide all the bigger picture and explanation, people may just, you know, screenshot the headlines or screenshot that 20 word tweet or something like that, and then just WhatsApp that, and that in and of itself becomes the news and what stays with people and, you know, what gets forwarded to all the uncle and auntie WhatsApp groups and things like that.
Yeah, the Pachit Machit groups. I mean, recently I went down to the ground to clinics to check out about ivermectin.
Yep.
This is a different kind of story. Mm-hmm. There were a lot more older people. They are actually very susceptible to this sort of misinformation and disinformation. Mm. That alone doesn't mean that the young people are not susceptible. You know, on that day itself, after coming home from covering the Lawan protest, I received a video on WhatsApp saying that, oh, is this happening in Malaysia? There are so many people wearing black shirt. And I'm like, number one, look at the video. Listen to the video. It's in Bahasa Indonesia. And Malaysia does not have autumn. Malaysia has summer all day long.
Yep.
And we do not have a building with North Face. Because as a fact-checking journalist, the first thing we do is, when we receive, we have to be very skeptical in everything we receive.
That's right.
So step one is that, where are the sources? Step two, look at the landmarks we see. For example, that video itself, you can actually look at some of the landmarks and you know that that particular video, we have seen the police department actually issued a statement saying that the video is not in Malaysia. But unfortunately, it's a missed opportunity by the police to actually, educate the public on how to do fact-checking on a video, because you can check and that particular Sydney protest happened at George Street and things like that.
Mm.
So with all this misinformation, misleading information sometimes, and it's so easy to create it's like a meal of misinformation and disinformation.
Yeah.
So easy. I can go to Malaysia Kini's website and then change some of the codes and, you know, make it look like real headline, you know, rather than a Photoshop. But there are, you know, these are the things where simple things that sometimes I usually tell, particularly my parents and all my family WhatsApp group, first thing you should do, Google and check and verify. So even journalists fell victim to this sort of thing. I'll take another example again. Just yesterday, when there was a statement from the former Minister of Natural Resources and Energy, YB Samso Nasara, his resignation. That particular statement came out of nowhere. Yes, people have been spreading about it, but there's no confirmation whether it was being posted on his Facebook. Of course, later, an hour later, it was posted. Because these are some of the few things that rather than, this is a problem for a lot of newsrooms. To report or not to report, is this real? How do you get the confirmation? Sometimes I would recommend to newsroom editors to, sometimes you really have to hold back before tweeting, before saying breaking news. It's best thing is to check, because once you post misinformation, disinformation, that is sort of like a demerit to your trust though. So it's a very difficult part, but also very important for, I would say that the newsrooms must really think about investing into training journalists and editors onto fact-checking and make fact-checking as a main part of their reporting as well.
On the show with me today is independent journalist Norman Goh. After the break, I'll be asking him if journalists and the media should be circulating protesters' faces on social media. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is independent journalist Norman Goh. And we're talking about media ethics and the role of the media during a protest. Now, Norman, something else I want to talk about is this idea of taking photos and videos of the protests on the ground. Now, if you look at, for example, if you join, let's say, the Telegram group of the protests and things like that, and they release their SOPs, the organizers are always very, very wary, and they are very, very particular. They say, unless you're very comfortable, you know, don't take photos, don't take pictures of other people without their permission, and then just, you know, put it on social media and things like that. So from the perspective of the media themselves, you guys are going on the ground, taking photos and videos and all sorts of things, right? You're covering the thing, that's your job. So what do you all need to keep in mind when taking photos and videos during a protest?
You know, sometimes some of the protesters, some of the participants who join a protest, they wouldn't want their faces to be seen. You know, we've seen someone wearing that, I think he has spotted too. There's one guy wearing that big face mask of a crow.
Yes.
Remember that, right? Yes. I was like, that is the best master of disguise. No, yep. You know, things like that was really good. It was a good cosplay in a way. I think if the, if the participants are not comfortable with that and they say that, I'm sorry, I would like to cover my face. Yeah, we respect that. But along the way, they're ready with their placard, the placards are up, and then as photographers as well, videographers taking videos, if they are okay with it, then as it is, we have to report as it is lah, taking the videos or photos, and they are willing to risk put themselves into the risk of police taking actions on them or identifying them. We've seen that yesterday, where the police, where the police actually released a police statement about trying to getting the public to identify the faces. But I think it would be very difficult to identify, although they're all wearing masks. Only thing you can see is their eyes. So I think it is also another way that when you're out in the public protesting in the public, you are bound to have your image taken as well. But I think for my personal opinion, I think intimidation, I do not welcome such intimidation. People should celebrate the sort of freedom of expression, also the freedom to protest peacefully.
Certainly. Now, Norman, can you explain, perhaps give some context? Because a couple of days ago, was it? There was this Twitter user, who is part of the media. We don't want to name anything or give him more publicity than he deserves. But, you know, he basically posted a couple of images of protesters and their faces, like all lined up, and everyone, like I've like a lot of my media friends and all, a lot of people were calling him out for circulating these photos, and I think the caption was that the police are looking at these images to catch the protesters. What did he do wrong? What are the consequences of what this Twitter user did?
this is actually a very, really a lot of journalists are actually in a dilemma, because number one, this is a public statement from the police calling the public to identify who are the protesters. I think that there are about 40 people in that. From the perspective of the organizers, is actually bringing harm and also intimidation towards the participants of the protest. But on the perspective of a journalist, this is the coverage. This is where the journalist was covering the press conference of the police. And this is a public statement. And they're basically also doing their job. It's part of their reporting as well. So, of course, it is easy to, you know, people are seeing that it's like putting the participants as criminals to be identified. So it's, in a way, for me personally, I was about to tweet about that too. Then I had to think about, what are the consequences am I going to put on the people who are in the list? Should I tweet about it, or should I share or retweet what's being shared by that particular journalist who's been covering the press conference? I chose not to, because that's my personal stand. I take it on a personal stand. But for that particular journalist who's been covering the press conference, I think, number one, you have to bear in mind he's doing his job. And whether it's wrong or not, that is very, very subjective again. But the point is that he is doing his job and he's reporting about the press conference by the Kuala Lumpur police in identifying some of the participants of the protest. That is straight up reporting, that is straight up tweeting, updating the information. What harm does it bring? That will be another question. That becomes very, very subjective again. So, you know, you're caught in the middle.
Yeah. Certainly, right. Because we don't want to outright blame the guy as well, because it's not that these were his photos. It's not that he took these photos on the ground, arranged them and said, hello, police, come and catch. This was the police released their images. Yes. And he's just putting it up on social media. But like you said, for you, you were a bit wary and then ultimately you decided not to go ahead with it. So what were you personally wary about? What were the potential impacts you thought that, okay, this perhaps I shouldn't put this out because it could bring some potential impact, like you said? Or what is this potential impact you're talking about?
Again, it is quite a dilemma even for me. I would usually report as it is. Police are looking for 40 people. But for me, I would choose to be careful, because at the end of the day, whether you want to play into the strategy, what's going on and how they are taking action towards those who are participating in the protest. Because, you know, looking at the list itself, you know, one of my friends pointed out three of the photos are actually the same person. So and it's really random. It's not like these are the well-known people, activists and all that. These are just very random group of people. Few questions is like, why did the police just select this few, and why they want to go after these sort of people? That becomes a question. Why do the authorities want to go at random people, and those who participated in rally? So, I mean, it's just really weird, I think, in my opinion. But also another point that I've been taking photos and videos at the same time. So basically, the photos are also showing a lot of the faces of so many of those who have participated. So I think it's one of the key things that I hold is that we do not want to bring harm, and also don't want to play into the hands of intimidating. Because at the end of the day, I still believe in the freedom of expression, and also freedom for the people to protest following proper procedures, of which they did, following proper physical distancing. So it's really difficult when you have that clash yourself. But at the end of the day, we have a choice of making decisions what we want to share. For example, if I have, let's say, a handout of a photo of a particular suicide report, for example, I'm given that photo, it's also public. Should I tweet about the photo of a dead body? No, I won't, because that brings harm as well. So it's also one of the few things I have to remember as journalists is that few things we do not want to bring any harm. So we have to be really careful on this kind of thing.
Certainly. Now, you know, we brought up COVID-19 a couple of times, and you touched on this a little bit earlier, you know, because we live in the times of COVID-19. And, you know, are there any SOPs that the media should always keep in mind when covering these protests? Because like we talked about, you know, there could be a sudden, you know, burst of, let's maybe not chaos, but let's say something like that can seem like chaos or what. And of course, the natural instinct of a journalist is I want to get there as quick as possible and, you know, document it, right? I think that's normal. So in those kinds of situations in the time of COVID, so for example, when even, you know, not just the Lawan protests, when we look at, you know, the opposition's ministers, their protests, when they take out the banner and they're all, you know, all the big guns are standing there. Of course, the natural instinct is we need to get it. We need to get these photos and all that. And with a lot of journalists on the ground in times of COVID, what should on-ground reporters be keeping in mind when it comes to this?
Again, I will put another word, another dilemma. You don't get the shot, you get questioned by your editor or you're back in the office. Why you did not get the shot? You know, that's not a thing. It's you know, again, journalists don't get paid a lot, to be honest. And they had no choice. You have to get the shot. Of course, we will always tell the organizers, please provide us the space so that we can observe SOPs as well in physical distancing. If you just, you know, crowd around at one particular point, like the Dataran Merdeka the other day, I'm actually very worried for the press because you had no choice. Where else can the media then take photos and videos? So, you know, although it's an open space, if the organizer know how to provide a safe space for work, particularly for the media, that will be even better. But of course, as media on the ground, once we are, you know, for example, when I cover as a photographer on the ground, is that once I'm done taking the photo, couple of seconds, I'm out. Rather than staying on, you know, staying shoulder to shoulder with fellow other photographers. And once you're done, because when you are done, you allow other photographers to take turns to take photos as well. These are some of the things that we can do by taking turns and then asking the for example, those who are carrying the banner to hold on. And then after that, we take some time to take some photos or videos or whatnot. That will allow, you know, a better arrangement on the ground. But of course, it's still a risk every time. It doesn't matter whether at Dataran Merdeka, even at court. When places are so limited, and basically we are putting ourselves at a risk at any time, because it is really difficult. There's no space, and sometimes the safety and the risk of getting infected is so high. Although some of our journalists have been vaccinated with one dose, the probability of getting infected, it is still there. So it is. Again, we still need to look after ourselves, and at the time, we just have to make do at the time of how we cover any event. Even if you are camping outside Bukit Damansara today.
Yeah, certainly. and this is why we've been saying, right, I think journalists and all have been saying for months and months and months that journalists need to be prioritized in the vaccine program, right? Because journalists are going on the ground, especially the on-ground people. It's different for news anchors, you know, just in the studios and things like that. Yeah. For on-ground people, they need to be vaccinated because it is really like that. All right, Norman, you know, as we wrap up this conversation, do you have a final message or some final thoughts on media ethics during a protest that you'd like to leave us with?
I think coming up, I will be seeing more protests coming up in this year and probably next year or not. At the end of the day, journalists have to remember that we do have to do our job, and we cannot be just following the flow at times on how things want certain event to be highlighted. Or negativity. We have, whether it's negative, whether it's positive, we have to provide all-round coverage during a protest. And bear in mind is that, like what I mentioned earlier, do no harm. And also important thing for journalists to note too is that we are answerable to the people. We're not answerable to the government or the authorities. So it's very important that we have to be very objective and we are responsible to the people in whatever in our reports.
On that note, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Norman.
Thanks for having me.
That was independent journalist Norman Goh sharing some insights on the role of the media during a protest. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.